Mr. Turner.
May it please the court and counsel, it is my pleasure to be here today representing brother and sister who are the owners of a parcel of farmland in Livingston County, Illinois. I'd be very happy and would encourage you to interrupt me at any time or to ask any questions. I don't consider it an interruption.
That's what this argument is about, is our question.
I'd like to focus primarily on...
By the way, that red light does not concern you. You haven't completely used your time up yet.
Thank you. I'd like to focus most of the argument on the rule against perpetuities, beginning with something of a historical perspective there. The rule against perpetuities is a somewhat infrequent issue of law.
Has any state court applied the rule of perpetuities to a pipeline easement or a railroad trackage easement or a road easement?
The U.S. District Court in the Southern District of Illinois.
Could you answer my question?
Yes.
Has a state court applied the rule against perpetuities to a pipeline or trackage or road easement?
Yes.
Okay, which one?
There are decisions from many states, Texas, Tennessee, Alabama, and up many other states, few in Illinois, none in Illinois.
So the answer, at least for Illinois, is none.
Yes.
Okay.
I was wanting to explain that its infrequency doesn't diminish the merit of the rule against perpetuities. The purpose is to obviously prevent the creation of stale conditions pertaining to real estate. In this case, whether the rule applies turns on whether the right to expand was a vested real estate interest created in 1952 or a condition, right, which doesn't vest until that right is paid for. We believe that the 1952 document is unambiguous and clearly creates a contingent right which would not have vested until the option to use it was exercised with the payment of a consideration which was identical to the consideration for the construction of the 1952 pipeline. There is really no dispute about what the language is, and I don't think there could be a dispute about what it means. There was no present interest, and a present interest has to exist for the rule against perpetuities to not apply. There has been some confusion and adoption of some future interest considerations by other states in upholding the expansion of pipeline rights and multiple pipelines. Historically, the rule against perpetuities was most often debated in estate planning concepts and in an estate planning situation, and courts were called upon to construe the testamentary intent of a decedent. Obviously, there was a desire to uphold that testamentary intent as much as possible out of respect for the decedent, and language exists in estate planning concepts that discusses the delay of an interest and a future interest. None of that has any application here. This is a business transaction. Unilateral intent of a testator isn't an issue. It's a mutual intent of two parties. And the idea of a future interest has no role in pipeline easement construction.
What is the status of that second pipeline now?
It's in the ground. And it's going to be tested and just weeks or months away from use.
In a different location.
In a different location. Well, it's in the same It's essentially in the same location. This easement says it should be within 10 feet. It's not within 10 feet, but it wasn't constructed under this easement. It was constructed under the threat of eminent domain.
I guess my threshold question was, do we have a case or controversy?
The appellant presented that issue at the lower court, asking that it be dismissed. The fact is there is an existing controversy from this perspective. That right to construct relying on that easement still exists, and there has been communication that it is possible for that to occur.
Does that get us there?
Well, the lower court didn't think that would cause the case to be dismissed. That argument was asserted by the appellant at the lower court. And as far as the appellant is concerned, if this case were disposed of because it is moot, that would be a favorable outcome. I'd also like to mention federal preemption. The Pipeline Safety Act has nothing to do with a rule against perpetuities case or have anything to do with whether the proposed expansion of a 1952 easement is within the scope created by the 1952 easement. Common sense is all that is necessary to know that that law would not apply here. The appellants have not made any effort to regulate this pipeline. Obviously, concern on their behalf of the difference between a 1952 easement carrying high-grade crude oil to the Chicago area as opposed to a high-pressure main carrying the heavier varieties of manufactured crude oil, some of which arise from the mining of sand tar in northern Alberta, Canada. And the history of the substantial environmental damage, explosion, and death, destruction that has occurred with these high-pressure pipelines has caused the appellants to suggest at the lower court that the proposed use exceeds the scope of the 1952 easement. No one would dispute that 52 easement intended that the landowner have a right to farm over the easement as though it didn't exist. And that, in fact, occurred for, 60 years. A farmer could get used to where it is and not go too deep with the tillage equipment. And the pipe wasn't that deep either. Water was allowed to percolate around it, and it was very compatible. But when you enter the factor of major destruction and potential death into the scenario, no one signed an easement so that risk could exist with regular farmland. Please answer your questions.
Any evidence in the record about the safety problems of heavy oil versus light oil?
There is evidence presented by the appellants in the trial court record. There was an incident in Clearbrook, Minnesota, where a pinhole leak, all it was a pinhole leak, was investigated by two employees of an affiliate of the appellee in this case. They drove to the site. It was the combustible engines of the pickup truck that caused an instant explosion and their death. And it all occurred from a pinhole leak. It wasn't a major thing at all. The mention of the 20,000 barrel release at Marshall, Michigan, rural Marshall, Michigan, and it's flow into the Kalamazoo River is in the record, and that's a major problem. Other incidents are also in the record. However, this case did not approach an evidentiary level because initially the court ruled that it should be decided on the pleadings, and there was a decision there with a reservation of the concern about safety, but then that safety concern was resolved with a summary judgment motion based on federal preemption. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I think we have your position, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Heller.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Since Judge Lawrence raised it, let me first go to the question of whether the case is moot because of the installation of the second pipeline. The second pipeline is, as Mr. Turner said, now in the ground. It's not quite operational yet. It was installed in a location about 50 feet from the existing pipeline, the original pipeline, whereas the 1952 right-of-way agreement requires that any additional line that's installed pursuant to that agreement be 10 feet away. So the second pipeline has been installed pursuant to the eminent domain power that Enbridge obtained from the Illinois Commerce Commission. Does that mean this case is moot? No, it doesn't. There's still a live controversy between the parties concerning the validity of the 1952 right-of-way agreement's second line right, the additional line right. And that's hotly disputed between the parties. There's every indication that at some future time, perhaps not too far in the future, that right will be exercised because there is another pipeline on its way between our terminal in Flanagan and our terminal in Cushing, Oklahoma. So under the case law, which we cited to the district court, there is a live controversy, and we believe more than sufficient to keep this case alive and for you to proceed with this appeal. I would also note that in this court, the mootness argument that was raised by the appellants in the court below has been abandoned. That's not anywhere addressed in their brief in this court. So I think we can safely conclude, and the court can safely conclude, that mootness is not something that you need to grapple with. But I just wanted to address that up front so that we spoke to your concern. Now, the district court's judgment is eminently correct under the law. It should be affirmed. And I'll just briefly outline our position on why that is so. The key issue on the rule against perpetuities, as Mr. Turner noted, is when did the right to construct an additional pipeline go into effect? If it went into effect when the right-of-way agreement was executed and delivered in 1952, the rule of perpetuities is out of the case. It's no longer applicable. There's no need to argue any further about it. We have argued, and the district court agreed with us, that it clearly went into effect at the time the right-of-way agreement was executed back in 1952. How do we know that? We know it from the language on the face of the agreement. It recites in at least two places that as part of the consideration for that right-of-way agreement in 1952, the second line right, the right to build an additional line at some future date, was being conveyed at that time. It was being granted at that time. The language could not be clearer. It says, for example, just to illustrate, the first mention of this, it says, as part of the consideration here and above set forth, the grantor hereby grants onto said grantee the right at any time or times to construct and operate one additional pipeline alongside the first pipeline. Later in the agreement, it says the one additional pipeline which grantor herein before gives and grants unto the grantee the right of way to construct and operate shall be laid parallel with and no more than 10 feet from the first pipeline. So we've got the parties acknowledging at the time they executed their agreement in 1952 that the ability to install and operate a second pipeline was being conveyed, granted, and delivered at that time. It's certainly not an option that only goes into effect at some future date. And this court has touched upon the distinction in the American Landholdings case between when does a right go into effect and when is it exercised as being the crucial factor in the determination whether the rule against perpetuities is applicable. So let me move on to the district court's grant of summary judgment on the what we've taken to calling the safety claims, or I guess more accurately, the lack of safety claims that the plaintiffs made in their complaint about this second pipeline. There are three reasons why the district court should be affirmed. The first reason is because what Enbridge proposes to do when it exercises its right to build a second pipeline is exactly what the agreement on its face gives it the right to do. The document says on its face that Enbridge is being granted the right to lay a pipeline for the transportation of liquids and or gases. The second pipeline, when it's built, is subject to that same right. That's a very broad standard, and I submit that as long as we build a second pipeline for the transportation of liquids and or gases, that's the end of the inquiry as between the grantor and the grantee. Now, certainly, the government has some say in regulating hazardous pipelines and how they are to be built and operated, but that's not a matter between the grantor and the grantee. As between them, they chose, by their failure to insert any provisions concerning specifications for the pipeline or the products it would carry beyond the language I just read, they chose to leave that in the hands of others, and in particular the federal government, which, as we point out in our brief, has promulgated a very comprehensive set of hazardous liquid pipeline safety regulations. The second reason why the district court's grant of summary judgment was proper and should be affirmed is because to the extent that the lack of safety claims are based upon violations of state law, and to the extent that the plaintiffs therefore ask the district court to say, because of these violations of state law, this pipeline cannot be built, all of those claims are preempted, expressly preempted, by the federal...
I'm worried about that aspect of the case, about whether it's ripe. Claim seems to rest on the language in the 1952 contract providing that beneficial use of the service will continue to reside in the original owner. And the owner predicts that there'll be a problem. But until there has been a problem, do we have a ripe dispute?
Well, what they say in their complaint, the way they've framed the issue, is that the pipeline is necessarily too unsafe to be built because of the type of product that it's going to transport, dilbit.
That strikes me as total speculation by the plaintiff.
I agree.
One waits and sees. The contract says preserve surface use. If the pipeline doesn't preserve surface use, there's a remedy under the contract.
That's correct.
If the pipeline does preserve surface use, there's nothing to litigate about. I'm troubled by the prospect of trying to resolve some conflict between state and federal law that may be entirely phantom, may never arise.
I will agree with you, Your Honor, that you can resolve this case and affirm the district court's entry.
This wouldn't be an affirmance. This would be a vacator and a remand with instructions to dismiss this aspect of the suit as unripe. The district court resolved this on the merits. This complaint was dismissed with prejudice. The question I'm asking is whether it should have been dismissed without prejudice.
No. No. And the reason for that is because what the district court...
So in your view, if the pipeline blows up tomorrow and the plaintiff can't use his surface interest for farming and files a lawsuit, that lawsuit should be dismissed on the ground of res judicata.
I wouldn't say that. There is a damages...
That's the difference between dismissing with prejudice and dismissing without.
Well, there's a damages remedy available under the contract, and he can avail himself of that, even if the district court's declaratory judgment that upholds the validity of the second line right is affirmed by this court. And after all, that's what the district court's judgment provided, that that right to build a second pipeline is valid. That's what we're asking this court to affirm. And you can do that without reaching the question of federal preemption if you believe that's appropriate. So, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.